Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
Collegiately speaking.
Walks into the end zone.
Touchdown.
Punches to the end zone.
This is Collegiately Speaking. With the voice of Northwestern football and basketball, Dave Enning, and former Northwestern star quarterback, Dan Persa. It's Collegiately Speaking. Let's go.
And welcome to another season of Collegiately Speaking, our weekly look at what's happening around college football, focusing on the Northwestern Wildcats and the Big Ten and some of the major topics around the sport from your home for Northwestern, WGN Radio. I'm Dave Ennett, pleased to be joined once again this season by former Wildcat quarterback Dan Persa. Number seven, good to be with you. You're looking well.
Always good to be back. It's fall again.
Can you believe it? Another season is upon us, but it's been a season, a summer, unlike anything I think either of us has ever been through, Dan. And it's in some ways it was odd to be back in the booth on Sunday at Rutgers and actually seeing a game, because it seems like there's been little talk about what would happen on the field. And we finally saw it on Sunday with Northwestern losing to Rutgers 24-7. And I've always loved hearing coaches say you make your biggest advancement from week one to week two. We're going to find out if that's the case this week, because they played their first home game against UTEP, which is coming off a win. But still, it was a little surprising that they weren't able to get more going offensively. Now, you've had a chance a little bit to watch Ben Bryant, who started quarterback the other day. It was a small sample size, I'm sure, that you've been able to watch. But what are your initial thoughts?
My initial thoughts is he's a very, very talented thrower. He's obviously very experienced, given his time at Cincinnati, and he played in a lot of games. I think he flashed great signs of arm strength and accuracy in that first drive, but it was kind of cut short pretty quickly. And then, you know, after that, he just really struggled to get comfortable in the pocket. And that's probably more so because the offensive line struggled a little bit, and Rutgers was able to get a lot of pressure. I think the thing that I was a little frustrated with was just not having the ability to get the run game going initially, and then kind of abandoning it full force throughout the game. It really put a lot of pressure on Ben, and then all of a sudden you're down 20 or 17, 21 nothing, and you have to throw, and then those guys are pinning their ears back. But I still think you got to stay balanced on offense, and Coach Jake has to do a better job with that.
There certainly seem to be some weapons in the skill positions on this team. Certainly AJ Henning, you saw it on that second play of the game offensively for Northwestern. He made that great catch in traffic. Cam Porter, we've seen him before, never really got going in the running game on Sunday. So those are things we'll keep an eye on. I want to bring in my partner on Northwestern football here on WGN Radio, Ted Albrecht, who's been at it for a while watching this team. Ted's now in his 30th season alongside me in the booth. And we've seen some better games than we saw on Sunday, Ted, I have to say.
Yes, we have. And I just heard a little bit what Dan said, and I think the two glaring negatives right off the bat were those two significant opening drives. It kind of set the tone. It took literally one quarter of play. If you add them both up, it's just south of 15 minutes.
Yeah.
Just could not get off the field defensively. And right away, like Danny just said, it really puts you behind that eight ball, because now you don't want to start throwing the ball, but the you kind of start to, and then you really get into trouble. But the second glaringest point, again, was the fact only 12 total yards rushing. And when you actually see that stat on paper, it really is demoralizing. I mean, you know, until you see it on paper in front of you and you're staring at it, it just magnifies that is a really big problem. And that has to be fixed, you know, immediately. I was at practice yesterday. I did talk to a few players about that. You know, the thing that I saw in the game is that there were some players that were unblocked from Rutgers in that run game. Two plays that I remember significantly. So I think if you don't run the football game, you can't control the clock, you don't keep the ball out of your opponent's hands, and you can't close games. If you can't run the football in the Big Ten particularly, how can you close a game down when you've got a 7 or 9 or 10 point lead if you can't run the ball? So I think those are two glaring problems there.
You know, everybody always talks about the fact you need to be able to run the ball in the Big Ten in November, but you got to be able to run it in September also when it's 90 degrees and your defense is on the field for 16 plays, whether you want to point a finger at them or not for not getting off the field. The fact is they still need a chance to recover, and they had two 16-play drives, and you just don't hang on to the ball, and you put that defense right back on the field in those kind of conditions. And Ted, as you pointed out on the broadcast, we saw that at Duke a few years ago, very similar situation where the defense – couldn't get off the field in the first quarter, and by the fourth quarter, they were gassed.
Yeah, they put together an 18-play drive right at the end of the half, of the first half, and that just killed us. In fact, Timmy McGargle, the linebackers coach, and I were talking about that, you know, during the week prior to going to Rutgers, and he goes, you know, that's why we need this heat. That's why we need these conditions so we can be prepared for that. But you know, the only way that we were able to move the ball, if you really examine it, was late in the game in the fourth quarter. I think I mentioned this during the broadcast, is that now Rutgers was getting tired, you know? And, I mean, it's going to happen eventually. Both teams are going to be pretty exhausted. And that's why we were able to move the ball a little bit in the second half. I do like one stat. That's one stat that I like. And that
okay,
is,
please. Defense, yeah, tell us.
Okay. It's not that we gave up 5 sacks, but I do have this. We only allowed 285 yards of total offense. That puts the Cats defensively right flat in the middle at rated 7th in the Big Ten. Now, I know it's only one game, and I know it's Rutgers, and they had similar record to us a year ago with 1-8 in the conference. But if you know, last year, you know, we were close to 400 in total offense. I think we're 380 something, and I'm just saying if we can improve on that and keep, you know, keep that total offensive number down for our opponents, that gives us a chance. But I want to say to Danny, you know, Dan, I thought two things happened in pass protection. Yes, I think we were the pocket was disrupted more than it should have been. But I think in that second quarter, we might have been holding the ball a little bit more than we should in the quarterback position. Your thoughts?
I agree. And I think Coach Jake has to do a better job of moving the pocket, right? You know, Ben Bryan isn't the most athletic guy, but he can run, you know, similar to like a Trevor Siemian, get out of the pocket and make some plays with his feet. But I think you can't run pass. You got to mix it up, get the ball in his hands, whether it's screens or you know, quick bubble plays or quick game. Just get them in a rhythm where you're getting easy completions, taking some pressure off the O-line. Quick game is a lot easier, right? And then, you know, on third and long, you can sit back and hold the ball. But yeah, I think it just became problematic when you're a sitting duck back there knowing they have to throw on, you know, 3rd and 7+. It's a challenge. Yeah.
Ted, let me ask you this.
Yes,
as far as the development of the offensive line, obviously, you lost some guys off that offensive line, and notably one of them playing on Sundays now as a first-round pick in the National Football League with Tennessee. I think it's a line that people have become accustomed to certainly hoping that they'll develop quickly because they've developed guys on a pretty regular basis here. But how much of an adjustment is there the first time some of these guys are out there playing with everything on the line when they haven't really had the opportunity except maybe at the end of games or spot duty here and there?
Well, Dave, if I look at the roster, there's really a lot of senior players on that offensive line.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if they're redshirt seniors or not, but I see a lot of senior, you know, guys up front. Now, it's different when you start as a true freshman, which I never did. I started as a true sophomore, but never as a true freshman. I think your hair's on fire at that point. But when you're in your senior college level at that point, you might be a little hyperventilating maybe prior to the kickoff or going out for that, you know, that first series. But after that, I think you just totally relax. And I just can't see how these guys didn't produce more than 12 yards on the ground. I mean, that is really mind-boggling to me. I mean, that's a serious issue.
Yeah, Ted, I don't really think they had a chance, right? I don't think the offensive play calling ever really gave them a chance. And you know, when they were running the ball, there was no motion, there was no jet sweeps, there was no nothing to stretch defense horizontally to open up some holes. So I just think Coach Jake has to pick it up a little bit on that front and just make it easier on the guys so they're not sitting ducks whether they're throwing or running.
I'm all for that. And, you know, I see a lot of this stuff in practice, and I don't know what happened. They got down 16. They got down 14 so quick. You know, maybe someone panicked. I don't know, but it's a problem.
All right, Ted, give us one just morsel that can generate some hope here going into UTEP at home on Saturday. How about it?
I have one.
Okay, good. Thank you.
Okay, you ready?
Yep.
Here we go. We only committed three penalties.
Three penalties?
Yes, we only committed three penalties. Last we averaged four a game. Now we're only averaging three. UTEP lost to Jacksonville State. So I'm saying there is positives. We only have three penalties, David.
Okay, that's a start.
Well, we know that every team, always the biggest improvement is between game one and game two.
I was just saying Dan.
I expect there's going to be improvement. And, you know, obviously UTEP is a lesser opponent than Rutgers, so I hope that we take advantage of that, kind of build our confidence. I'm a big believer you can't have confidence unless you feel or sense some success. If you're striking out and you can't get the bat on the ball, how do you feel like you're going to be able to hit a single in a clutch situation? Right. You've got to get some hits. You've got to get some things that build your confidence. And so this would be a good game to build your confidence with some success. And that's where I'm going, Dave. That's it.
I think that's a good note on which to end. Teddy, thank you.
Okay, thank you so much for having me on.
And we'll see you on Saturday. That's Ted Albrecht. You hear him game days on WGN Radio. And 30 years he and I have worked together in the booth. How about
still
that?
Young, still young,
still youthful, right? Well, again, this will be an interesting game on Saturday. And I think Ted used the term lesser opponent, but I think if you look at Northwestern over the course of the past year, they really can't afford to look at anybody as a lesser opponent because they had some games last year, which I think everybody thought they were going to win. And ended up taking losses in those.
Yeah, and I agree with Ted. I think at the end of the day, the defense, you know, shows some signs of life. It just seemed like they couldn't get off the field, couldn't make a play. And, you know, I don't think they really gave up any explosion plays at the end
right.
of the day.
They
so
didn't.
They kept everything in front of them. And I think that's what Coach Braun was trying to implement, more of a Coach Hank type of defense. Keep everything in front of you, make somebody drive 16 plays, knowing that either they're going to make a mistake or we're going to make a play.
You know,
neither of those things really happened.
I think if you, I think if you go back and look at that first drive too by Rutgers, that it wasn't third down wasn't really the problem. The problem was, I mean, Greg Schiano, he's kind of coaching for his program, right?
Absolutely.
And so they're going for it on fourth down, and they converted three fourth downs, and they also, let's face it, I mean, they hit a pass play. It was a tremendous catch.
It's a great throw,
great catch, but it still took a number of looks at the replay to call it a touchdown. So anyway, that's the margin for error is small, let's face it. And here's a guy who I saw in New Jersey on Sunday. I think it was Sunday. And he had been in Texas on Saturday night. He's everywhere. He's the senior college football writer for ESPN. Our friend Adam Rittenberg is with us now. And do you have jet lag? Are you you kind of tired now, Adam?
It wasn't too bad, honestly. It was one of those weekends where you dreaded having travel issues. And for some reason, the travel guys smiled on me. Every flight was early, didn't have any scrambles at the airport, made it back actually earlier than I thought on Sunday night. Got to see the end of the LSU-Florida State game. So overall, certainly a better weekend than the Cats had.
Well, yeah, and you got to see it firsthand. Just your thoughts, what's your takeaway from what you saw in Piscataway on Sunday?
Well, I think that the problems that we have really seen for the last few years have been amplified. And, you know, while you could probably attribute some of it to what went on this summer and, you know, everything that went on from a kind of away from the field standpoint, you know, there's still a lot of problems with this roster and overall with the philosophy. And, you know, I'm curious if you guys have talked about this, especially Dan, like what is Northwestern's offensive philosophy right now? I don't know what it is. I don't know what they do well or what they're trying to do. And I've struggled with that for a few years. And while I think that they can make some improvements, certainly from that first performance, and there were some encouraging signs, especially on the defensive side of the ball, you know, it has been a long time now that this offense has been one of the least productive in college football. And unfortunately, it appears to be in that same boat again this season.
And that's what's been really, and we did talk about that before you came on, Adam. That's been the most frustrating thing, right? Before, you know, for a long time when I was playing or before that or a little bit after that, you know, we always had an identity, whether it was throwing the ball or you know, ball control or taking care of the ball. I just, to your point, I can't find out what they're trying to do. So, you know, you come out in the first drive, guns blazing, throw nonstop, and then you're quickly down 14-0, and then, you know, you abandon the run after, you know, being down 14-0, which really isn't that much at the end of the day in the first half. So I just agree with you. It's been all over the place. It's been really, as an offensive guy, very frustrating to watch, frankly, because I think there's so much more you can do to help these guys out that's not being done to develop an identity.
Yeah, and I think that's what needs to be refined here in a hurry to figure out, you know, where are our strengths as an offense? Who needs to be put in positions to succeed? What are the weaknesses? How do you work around those? But yeah, you're right, Dan. When you play, I mean, you were part of a run of very good quarterbacks at a time when Northwestern was really a fun offense to watch. And you know, I don't know what happened, but to make it change, but it really happened a while ago, if you think about it. It happened when the program was winning. And that was something I thought about a lot since the game on Sunday, is that you can certainly attribute, you know, it's been bad since the end of the 2020 season, but the offense has really been not great from for a while, you know, going beyond that, when Northwestern was winning at a high level. And so I don't know what changed philosophically, or maybe it was just a run of recruiting misses. I mean, it's probably a layered explanation, but, you know, from really about 2015, 2016 on, Northwestern hasn't been a great offense. And it was a very solid offense and times a very exciting offense before that. So I think you're now seeing, you know, kind of the results of a lot of years of production that wasn't great on that side of the ball.
Adam, I want to get some bigger picture thoughts from you and kind of continuing on this theme, because as I watched a lot of games over the weekend, and I watched as many of them as I could, there were some pretty impressive performances nationally and within the Big Ten. But there were also some in the conference that against some of Northwestern's division rivals for one more year, that kind of left me thinking, you know what, that's okay, but that's not what I expected from that team. Did you kind of look at some of these games over the weekend and think that I expected more from this team or that team, and especially a few of the teams in the Big Ten West?
Right. Yeah, I think you could certainly look at the first game that took place, Nebraska-Minnesota, and it was a real struggle for both offenses to score points. And Minnesota, very, very fortunate to win that game. They didn't play well offensively. They didn't have a lot of big plays. And maybe that can still evolve. I think they have some talent on that side of the ball. New quarterback who's played a bit in Cali McManus. And then obviously Brevin Spanford is a really impressive tight end. Chris Ottman-Bell didn't play. And maybe when he gets back, they'll be a little more dynamic. But I thought they would be. I knew Nebraska just because of seeing Jeff Sims, that he's somewhat of a one-dimensional quarterback and much better as a runner than a passer, and certainly has to be better going forward, especially this week now when they go out to Colorado, given what Colorado did in their opener. I think Wisconsin was fine. Iowa was fine. Iowa, there's going to be so much attention on their points total and everything with Brian Ferentz. But I thought overall, especially with a quarterback who had missed most of the preseason with an injury, and had missed part of the spring as well with a different injury in Cade McNamara, I thought that was a serviceable first performance for the Hawkeyes. We'll see how they do this week going out to Ames to face their in-state rival, Iowa State. But, I think it's a division that maybe does not have a dominant team nationally, but still has a lot of really good defenses. And then Wisconsin, to me, is the most intriguing because they've had such a transformation from a scheme standpoint on offense. And we got to see a little bit of that against Buffalo. They're going to have to be even better, most likely, this week against Washington State, a team that shocked them last year in Madison.
You mentioned Colorado, and of course they've been the talk of college football this week, along with Duke, by the way, the team Northwestern's going to see in 2 weeks. But is every athletic director in the country who needs a head coach, and I guess you could throw Northwestern into the mix here, because we don't know who's going to be coaching this team in 2024, is everyone going to go to try to take Colorado's blueprint here and go out and find the next coach prime, if the next coach prime even exists?
Right, David. I think that second part is the relevant. I think there's certainly a lot of tremendous players, some of whom have entered coaching, but I just don't think there's very many Hall of Famers that have Dion's personality and charisma and willingness to do this. I think he's just one of one in terms of who he is and how he operates. And so I think replicating him is going to be very difficult. I think replicating some of the things he did to overhaul the roster are things that absolutely could be copied by the next crop of head coaches. I think you're seeing the programs that handle the portal well and make upgrades. Florida State is really at the top of that list. Michigan, I think, has been very smart in how it's used the portal. They can get better. And those who maybe are unable to or unwilling to go into that space are having are really struggling in 2023. So I would say this, though, in relation to Northwestern. Sean Lewis is the offensive coordinator at Colorado, and he was the formerly the head coach at Kent State, and he runs an incredibly exciting dynamic offense, which I think is really going to be important for Northwestern for whoever they hire as the next head coach in 2024. Also a Chicago guy, played at Wisconsin. I think Sean Lewis absolutely should be someone on the list for Derek Gragg and the others making the decision at Northwestern.
Yeah, Adam, digging into that a little bit more, this season, by the looks of it, might be a little bit tough for Northwestern. And assuming that's the case, it's probably a lame duck coaching staff. Give us a picture of what the job looks like for Northwestern. Who would be potential candidates? I mean, Sean Lewis would be amazing. I hadn't even thought about him. But just the overall profile of who would be interested in this job. It's still a marquee job in one of the top two conferences. So maybe a little bit more color on that.
Right. Yeah, I think it's going to be a job that you're going to have to ask a lot of questions on the front end, Dan, if you're a coach or a coaching agent. Who's advising these guys, what are they stepping into exactly? Roster wise, facilities wise, maybe to a much lesser degree, because Northwestern's in a much better place with facilities. But, the questions about Ryan Field are going to be important. Who is really in charge at Northwestern? Because there's been a lot of scrutiny, as you guys know, on, on Derek Gragg and President Michael Schill. So what type of administrative support is that person going to get? You know, money is not the problem. That's the one thing Northwestern has and will continue to have in droves because it's a member of the Big Ten. So from a resources standpoint, if you're a coach that's at a Group of Five program or at a lower resource Power Five, I think it's a job that has some real appeal. I do think it's important that whoever Northwestern hires, guys, has previous head coaching experience because of how difficult this job appears to be in the initial stages. Could have a lot of players transferring out. I think there has to be some philosophical shifts going forward from what they had been to what they need to be. There have been some challenges, as you guys know, in the transfer portal era of getting transfers into Northwestern. Those are questions that candidates are going to be asking, but it's still a Big Ten job. It's a place that won very consistently from, 2007, 2008, all the way through 2020. And I think with the right coach and the right philosophy, can have success again. So who are the candidates? I think, again, head coaching experience is really important. Certainly a guy like Sean Lewis makes sense to me, as does a guy, a very different type of coach, but one who's had a lot of success everywhere he's been at some really tough jobs, and that's Willie Fritz down at Tulane. They won the Cotton Bowl last year. They won the American Athletic Conference. They're a top 25 team. Willie's 63 years old, but really comes off a year younger than his age. And I think would look at this as maybe a last stop to turn around one more program before he calls it quits. And so I think he's someone Northwestern should pursue. I think there's a couple of ACC coaches at academically oriented schools that are interesting as well. Dave Clawson at Wake Forest. Mike Elko, who just had the big win for Duke on Monday night over Clemson. Both of those guys absolutely should be on the list, as should others that maybe I'm not mentioning. But I really think that Northwestern should find someone who has led programs before and also understands the transfer portal environment.
By the way, even though Fritz is 63, that's young, Adam. So let's not push him to the end of his career. And one other thing, too, that's whoever comes in, not going to be guaranteed. Well, they don't know where they're going to be playing their home games for 2 years. Now, whether it's next year or the year after, that's another question that is going to be looming for whoever takes that job. But that can also be an attraction for a coach to say, hey, you're going to be coaching in a new stadium in a couple of years. So weather the storm for now. So a lot of moving parts on this one.
It really is. And I mean, Dave, you remember this just like I do. I keep coming back to this. The offensive pivot that Northwestern made after the 99 season under Randy Walker with Kevin Wilson, they need that again. I'm more convinced of that than ever because of the roster situation and just the overall situation with the program. You've got to bring in somebody who's going to do something different schematically, because the way it is right now and the way it's been going at that program just isn't working. And I don't see that turning around anytime soon.
Well, they revolutionized college football in 2000 with that offense and won a share of the Big Ten championship. So, Adam, always great talking to you. Get some rest. Where are you heading this week?
I'm going to be out in Ames for the Cy-Hawk game, which should be third time covering that game in that stadium. So interested to see those two teams and a little easier travel, though. The Des Moines flight shouldn't be too hard. That may be famous last words.
Yeah, no, you'll be fine. Thanks for joining us. We'll catch up with you again in a few weeks if we can, okay?
Absolutely. Thanks, guys. Appreciate you.
Thanks. That's Adam Rittenberg, senior college football writer for ESPN. And interesting stuff there. And, there's so many factors that go into something like this. And Northwestern had so much success for so long that, which I know to old timers who remember when it wasn't that way, may seem like kind of a crazy statement. But you look at the success they've had and the ability to win, and people said it's a place you can't win consistently, and they were able to do it. And so now they got to find somebody who believes they can win consistently again. And by the way, I think people have to tip their cap a little bit to what David Braun has done, not only going into a very difficult situation, but also keeping most of this team intact after the players had the ability to go into the portal. I saw Jeremiah Lewis transfer back to Duke, and he played the other night. He was the only one among the projected first and second teamers, I believe, who left the program. They had some freshmen leave, obviously some recruits decommitted. But under the circumstances, that's a heck of a re-recruiting job that the staff did.
I think Adam makes a really good point. Just on the change in philosophy, and I felt it too as a fan. You watch, you know, other programs and their high-flying offenses, and it just felt like Northwestern pulled back a little bit and became more defensive-minded, which it worked out. But the margin of error got so slim. There were always one-possession games, and a lot of times they worked out because they have tough kids and play really tough. But, you know, one bounce of a ball and you're quickly 3-9 and 1-11, right? So I think we got to get away from that a little bit and inject some excitement back in the program. And obviously I am biased, but I think that a lot of that comes from the offensive play. And let's face it, Northwestern is going to struggle from an attendance standpoint, probably for this year and a couple the future years, depending on where they're playing. You got to put a good product on the field, especially on offense.
Yeah, no doubt about that. Well, things have changed in college football, Dan, since your illustrious career. And I've got to think, as somebody who played now, 12 or 13 years ago, you're looking at not the transfer portal necessarily. That's certainly a big part of it, but also NIL. And you see the impact that this is having. And then you also have the expansion, the realignment, but realignment of the conferences. You see the Big Ten going to an 18-team conference next year, and the added travel certainly that's going to enter into it. You see the dissolution of the Pac-12. You see the enlargement of the Big 12 and the Big 10 and the SEC, and now the ACC bringing in Stanford and Cal and SMU. It's just like somebody tore up what we always thought college football was and just said, we're going to try something different now. We're going to do it this way.
It's been interesting to watch. I hate to use the word sad because it makes me seem like an old guy complaining on his front porch.
But okay, I'll do it.
Right. But no, for forever, college football has been a very regional sport. And, you know, it's national at some points when you get into the playoff and the BCS and whatnot. But there was always a regional aspect to it that kept it really fun. And now it's just not anymore. It's mostly with NIL, but the portal has really been an issue in my mind, because at least in the NFL, you have contracts, you know, there's trades, there's different things of that nature. Having kids be on 1 year deals, be able to I saw the quarterback now at Rice. He started at USC, went to Georgia, West Virginia, now Rice in 5 years. So it's like, is that what we're trying to get out of college football? It's interesting, but I think if you're Northwestern, you just got to focus on the main thing, which is building culture, building, you know, great teams, and all that other stuff doesn't really matter, right? The NIL money, whether it's from internal not boosters, but from collectives or other organizations, will come if you play well, and you know, the travel's the travel, right? You're going to have to fly to California to play. It's not the end of the world. But I think the more you kind of get the deer in the headlights look and focus on all that stuff, it blinds you. You just got to bring it back a little bit and focus on the main thing, which is building out the core and the team and just getting back on the right track.
Well, let's lighten the message up a little bit, because we do have games this week. Week two in college football, Northwestern playing UTEP this week. Of course, the big game nationally is going to be Texas and Alabama, the rematch of the game the Tide won last year on a late field goal to win by 1 point down in Austin. You've got Nebraska, Colorado this week, which certainly has a lot of people excited. So we have to bring in Super Joe. Now, Super Joe is always our ace prognosticator, and so we would not want to do an edition of Collegiately Speaking without Super Joe's predictions.
Prediction is to say or estimate a specified thing will happen in the future.
Super Joe's predictions.
Thank you, Dave and Dan, and a happy football season to you. Many eyeballs will be headed to Colorado, where Coach Prime has taken over the college football world. A lot of eyeballs also will be in Lawrence, Kansas for the Bill Self Bowl. Illinois and the Jayhawks on Friday night, but I am going out east to Raleigh, North Carolina, where the NC State Wolfpack will play host to the number 10 ranked Notre Dame Fighting Irish. This is actually Sam Hartman's third time going to Raleigh. He's 0-2 in the previous contests, but I have him winning this game and covering the 7.5-point spread. Notre Dame opened as an 8-point favorite, so the line is actually coming down in our favor. I like Hartman as a senior with a little more talent around him. Oftentimes, you get worried about a first road game, but Notre Dame, like Northwestern last year, already played overseas in Ireland, and the look-ahead spot of Ohio State is actually 2 weeks away, not one. So I doubt that they are going to overlook NC State. I am a little nervous about the former NIU head coach, Dave Dorn, and his NC State Wolfpack, but I do think Notre Dame handles business on the road. I will take the Irish and lay the 7.5 on the road.
All right, Super Joe, nice job, and we'll find out exactly how nice next week when we do this again. Not a ton of great matchups this week. It's not unusual this time of year. I mean, you do have that Notre Dame Ohio State in a couple of weeks, but this week, best games, mentioned Alabama and Texas, Nebraska, Colorado, just a lot of intrigue. We don't know if it's going to be that good a game or not. Iowa State, it's always a great rivalry. I'm really interested to see Wisconsin at Washington State. I think that could be really a terrific game.
Absolutely. It's still early, Dave. You know, got to get through the first couple of weeks. Teams got to figure themselves out, and the schedule has to figure itself out as well. But, yeah, you just hope there's one or two each weekend.
Well, I'm just glad we're back talking college football.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a good relief. That's for sure.
All right. So we'll do this again next week.
Absolutely. And
every week. All right, man. Well, good to have you back, Dan Persith. Many thanks to Ted Albrecht and also Adam Rittenberg. Jack Heinrich, our ace producer now, and, of course, Super Joe with his predictions. And, of course, we will bring you Northwestern football on Saturday, part of a college football doubleheader on WGN Radio. We'll start at 2 o'clock from Ryan Field at Evanston, the Wildcats and the Miners of UTEP with the kickoff at 2:30. And then after our postgame show, we will take you to that Texas-Alabama game on WGN. So we certainly hope you'll tune in then. Now for former Wildcat quarterback Dan Persa, I'm Dave Ennett. Thanks for being with us. You've been listening to Collegiately Speaking from WGN Radio.